The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Well, for the very first time, the United States Army is going to sell more weapons abroad than it purchases during the year. For the first time, we will see more of our own weapons going to foreign countries during the next year than we ourselves in our own military establishment will purchase. This is a statement by the Defense Department's Chief Purchasing Officer, Jacques Gansler, who is Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Materiel Acquisition, kind of a mouthful, but he also told a meeting of defense contractors that foreign military sales for all three military services will be between $7 to $8 billion. This came off the Reuters wire. He said next year, for the first time, the foreign military sales by the United States Army will exceed its own domestic procurement. This was at a meeting of the National Industrial Security Association. And recently, newspaper articles have said that more than just one private firm is going to get into the act to train some of the, not only flyers, but in this case even ground troops for some of the Middle Eastern Arab oil producers, Iran, Saudi Arabia primarily, and that not only will they be trained on U.S. military bases, which by the way is going on right now, but they're going to be trained by private organizations such as the Bunnell Corporation in Alhambra. And there are many others that are getting in the act too. Well, we were trying to look into the possibility of going to some of our Air Force bases with our mobile television unit. I was hoping to do a few programs, more of a window of the world kind of on-the-spot television and radio simulcast from one or two of our Air Force bases. Preliminary investigation indicates we're not going to be able to do that. We're not going to be allowed on those air bases with our cameras to take pictures of Arabs marching, drilling, learning how to fly American F-14s and F-5s and F-4F fighter jets, because for some reason that is very embarrassing to the military establishment. But I noticed that on the late night news here in the Los Angeles area, someone had apparently gotten a camera somewhere adjacent to one of our Air Force bases in the American Southland. And I guess with one of those very powerful telescopic lens had managed to get some pictures of some of these Arabs marching on one of our Air Force bases. Now, I don't know why in the world the military establishment is so super sensitive about that, but I got a memo back from our television productions department that showed that it would be virtually impossible for us to go aboard one of our military establishments and to bring you pictures or even audio interviews with some of the Arabs who are training in the United States. Now, why that is, don't ask me. All I know is it's going to be virtually impossible. So we'll have to forget that particular program. We'll simply tell you that that is happening. It is true. The news media know that. They are reporting it. And we'll let it go at that. We can't bring you the actual sights and sounds. But there are many Arabs from different countries. They're now being trained not only by the military establishments in the United States, but even by private organizations that are hiring Vietnam and Korean War veterans that are ex-military men in order to learn how to use some of these sophisticated weapons, now going out to some of these foreign countries in greater numbers and worth more money than is being supplied to the United States military establishment. The Word of God would say we in the United States ought to trust God for our national security, that we ought to put our total faith and trust in the eternal Creator God who created mankind and who rules in the heaven as well as on this earth, who right now is allowing man-made governments to hold sway over humankind, who is not interfering except here and there as he may be required, but who is allowing the normal course of human nature to go as he had spelled out an outline in Bible prophecy, which after all is merely history written in advance, a combination of not only how God knew human societies would develop to that ultimate time when unless God would step in we would annihilate ourselves, but also those predicted interventions or interruptions of human activity as God felt need. The overall simple principle of the Old Testament would simply show if we would trust in God, we wouldn't need any military establishment. But now that I have you laughing, The point is that since we will not trust in God, that even God's own word in the lessons you see in the book of Judges and during the days of David and Solomon, the kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of Judah, would warn any materialistic human nation of this earth that it had better have the biggest, best possible military force it could ever muster if it's going to survive in this world. When ancient Israel originally turned its back on God and wanted a physical king like other nations around, that was during the days of Samuel, when Samuel was the judge over Israel, the people wanted a king. Here came proud old Saul, who was head and shoulders taller than any other man in the nation. And if you've ever read the story of 1 and 2 Samuel, it's awfully interesting reading, pretty interesting history there, of how David finally came to the throne, first of Judah and later over all of Israel, then his son Solomon, then the virtual civil war, the rift between the two countries, the separate dynasties of kings that emerged after that time, the northern capital at Samaria, the southern at Jerusalem. And from that time on, Israel and Judah were two totally separate nations. It's very interesting reading. You know, if you could go back there and see something in the Bible that would be about like the United States does it today, you just wouldn't believe your ears. For instance, if you would see David's Defense Department being called to task because word had reached David's ears through Abner or someone that those 300 left-handers that were real good with super sure slingshots didn't have any slingshots, because the guy would say with rather shamed face, well, you see, we sold those to the Hivites. We did that so we could pay for the chariots being delivered to the cavalry. David would say, yeah, but the cavalry tells me the chariots have been diverted to the Philistines. Oh, yeah, well, that's right, King. We overlooked that, but you see, those were the ones up there in Jezreel deployed along the border, and we could move them more quickly than get them from the factory, which is down toward Egypt. Oh, sure, I understand. Well, why do they need them? Well, the Philistines claim there might be trouble pretty soon between them and the Perizzites. And what about all those spears you promised our spearmen? Well, we're getting delivery in about 2 years. But first, we're giving away 200,000 to the Hivites, 100,000 to the Jebusites, 600,000 to the Perizzites, 200,500 to the Philistines, and we've got to give away another 100,000 to the Edomites and another 50,000 to the Moabites. And besides that, the Moabites have been threatening the Edomites lately, and we think we've got a pretty good market there, because if we give away all those spears, we're going to get a huge order for shields. Wouldn't that be unbelievable? But that's what's happening today, except we're talking about anti-tank missiles and aircraft carriers and troop-carrying and rocket gunship helicopters and ASW helicopters, and we're talking about even infantry arms, such as submachine guns and mortars and bazookas and all that type of thing. And we're talking about some of the most fantastic, sophisticated weaponry along the lines of the hardware that would be delivered to navies and air forces that you could even begin to imagine. When you read some of the statistics in some of the magazines and the journals of military hardware, it just is really dizzying. And now you see the announcement for the very first time. The United States is selling more weapons abroad than it, in its own defense establishment, will purchase for the year. It seems to me like maybe we're doing something wrong. Now, I know there are an awful lot of justifications for it, because people claim, well, if we didn't get this $7 to $8 billion during the next year for all of these military sales, why, the French would get it, or the Czechs would get it, or the Communist Chinese, or the Soviet Union, or maybe even Britain or West Germany. Somebody would provide these arms. And that's a pretty good argument for someone who is in the arms-making business. They're in the business of making money by selling their arms, and if our own military establishment can't afford it because ours are poor or the others are rich, I guess that's a fairly palatable argument. It goes down pretty easy with the Pentagon officials and the State Department, I'll tell you that. It just doesn't look very wise to the average citizen with about a 15 or 16-year-old son coming along, who in the next 2 or 3 years may be called upon to go give his life to fight against some of the very nations that we are right now arming and training how to use those arms to protect themselves against the United States in the event we would attack them to prevent strangulation of our economy. You're kind of in that hanged if you do and hanged if you don't, but the whole thing revolves around who it is we really trust. You know, the Bible calls that a kind of a spiritual harlotry. I said recently that in the Old Covenant, the terms and agreements that were made there, the conditions that were imposed upon ancient Israel, are likened in the Bible as the proposal of a potential husband to a bride, saying, I will do thus and such, I'll protect you, provide for you, I'll be your champion, your inspiration, your helpmeet, your breadwinner, if you will be faithful to me and keep the home and rear the children and this and that. Now, I know that's all outdated and old-fashioned. A lot of people claim they don't need an agreement or a piece of paper to plan their marriages on, but we'll just dismiss those people from school for the moment, not talk about them, let people with addled heads go on and be addled, and let's talk about what makes common sense for the moment. The Old Testament was, in that sense, a marriage agreement, and the Bible draws that analogy. It shows that Israel, as a physical human nation, said, we will do all that the Eternal has said. They promised that right at the foot of Mount Sinai. They said they would keep God's law, and God went on then to spell out exactly what all of the blessings would be that would come to them. You can find that in the 19th chapter of Exodus, and beginning on verse 5, where God said, now therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be unto me a nation or a kingdom of priests and an holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak unto the children of Israel. Moses called them all together. He laid before their faces all these words. Verse 8, you find the covenant agreement. He said, the people answered and said, all that the Eternal has spoken we will do. So they agreed to do exactly as God had said, all of which was good for them, because every single thing God told them to do, including the Ten Commandments, was good for them. If he spelled out laws concerning landmarks, that they were to be honored, that there wasn't to be graft and chicanery and double-dealing and dirty, deliberate grabbing of somebody else's inheritance or land, that was good for them. If he spelled out laws of health, that was good for them. It kept them in good health and good mental and spiritual tranquility and peace of mind. If he spelled out, you shall not steal, that was good. It was good for the one who didn't, and good for the one who wasn't stolen from. If he spelled out laws that protected marriage, laws that had to do with keeping known animals that were harmful, such as an enraged bull, carefully penned, and those laws are in the Bible, that was good for them. There was not one single law, suggestion, innuendo, or a little breath of what God told ancient Israel to do, which was bad for them. Including every one of the Ten Commandments, most specifically those very commandments which Jesus came on later and magnified, made far more binding now, not only in the letter, but even in the spirit. So that instead of just a physical act, even thinking about it would become a sin, as Jesus plainly pointed out in the Sermon on the Mount. Over in Leviticus, the 26th chapter, God enumerated all of the great blessings that would occur to any nation, and that holds true. I don't care whether you're talking about Bhutan or whether you're talking about Chad. Let me tell you that the living principle applies no matter who you think which nation may be in the light of God's Word, through ethnology or demography or what. It doesn't matter what they are politically, racially, or through creed or religious belief. Any country which would keep God's laws nationally, be it Lilliputia or Islandia someplace, which of course don't exist, but the littlest country in the South Pacific someplace, all of these great blessings would occur, because you are dealing with a living, ruling, creator being who is a great personality in an actual specific place who is working out a purpose here below. He says in Leviticus 26, verse 2, you shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary. I am the Eternal. If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in due season. and the land will yield her increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. God's Word says there is a direct relationship between observing God's laws, which, as I've said and could do hundreds of programs on the subject, are good for us, and even the weather. Crops, cattle, babies, physical health, happiness in marriage, success on the job, living principles of life. He said, that's the blessing, that's what happens. Verse 5, your threshing shall reach unto the vintage, and the vintage will reach unto the sowing time. You will eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely. That means total security. It means total protection from any kind of harm from without. The United States, of course, puts its basic trust and faith in its armed forces. Yet today, our armed forces grow ever weaker as we depend more and more upon allies, and we ship massive amounts of arms overseas, and then we expect to turn around and fight with the same kind of arms against our own kinds of arms. It's going to be hard to tell who's in which army in the future. I presume we even send them the uniforms and the helmets. The only thing that may be different is the shoulder patch, and by the time you get close enough to read that, you're in trouble. But you see, we depend in the United States not on God, but we depend for protection from our enemies and guarantees of safety for U.S. citizens at home and abroad, and the guarantee of a safe world trade and travel upon our defense organizations, not upon God, obviously. And if anybody would seriously propose to Congress that we all unitedly and collectively get on our knees, that Congress repents of its personal and collective sins, that Gerald Ford does the same thing, and all of us get on our knees and call out to God, as did a king in Israel one time, King Jehoshaphat, who actually saw an unbelievable event occur where armies who were about to attack him turned on each other and were destroyed. No, that would get you the biggest roll of belly laughs you ever saw. People would say, what kind of a wild-eyed, fire-and-brimstone, hair-pulling, screeching, hoarse-voiced, tent-camp revivalist is this guy who is screaming out that Congress ought to get on its knees and call out to God? Well, let me tell you, if Isaiah were here, he would say that. If Jeremiah were here, he would say that. So would Hosea and Amos and Joel. So would Daniel. So would Elijah or Elisha, so would Jesus Christ, so would the Apostle Paul. As a matter of fact, they do say that. And in the sense that those men's messages have been kept alive, and some of them gave those messages and put them down into writing to be preserved for our day, and they are far more applicable to our time than they were even then, it is a practical fact that Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, do tell our peoples collectively, national leaders of the United States and Britain and other countries for that matter, to repent, to turn to God, and to let God be their protector and their provider. But now the laughter is reaching such a pitch that I can scarcely hear, so I better go on with the subject. God said that He would give us peace in the land, verse 6. You would lie down, none shall make you afraid. I will rid evil beasts out of the land, neither shall the sword, a symbol of war, go through your land. And you shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword. Five of you shall chase 100, and 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight. And your enemies will fall before you by the sword, for I will have respect unto you, and make you fruitful, and multiply you, and establish my covenant with you. Incredible, isn't it? The blessings. The greatest nation on earth, God said, He would make of any human, physical nation. Primarily, this was the covenant to Israel, that's true. But I'm still saying the living principle would work, no matter which nation it is, that would turn to God and avail themselves of those promises. But, He said, if you will not hearken to Me, and will not do all these commandments, if you will despise My statutes, or your soul abhor My judgments, I will do this. Now you begin to listen to what is actually the state of life, the state of being of our countries and our peoples, Britain primarily and the United States. He said, I will appoint over you a terror, consumption, that's consumptive diseases, the burning ague that consumes the eyes, like measles and meningitis, which can bring blindness in childhood, that cause sorrow of heart. You will sow your seed in vain, for your enemies shall eat it. Isn't that an interesting statement? millions upon millions of acres of wheat and corn and soybeans. And we sow it. We cultivate. We irrigate. We plow. We plant. We nurture. We harvest. We preserve. And then we pour it in the holds of ships and send it over there to the Soviet Union or Red China or India or some other country. But now this Bible prophecy doesn't mean what it says, does it? People don't seem to think so. It says here, I will set my face against you, and you will be slain before your enemies, and they that hate you will rule over you, and you'll flee when none pursues you. And if you will not yet for all this listen unto me, I will punish you seven times more for your sins. Verse 19 says, I will break the pride of your power. That has been done. That was done very likely in 1950, when we learned that the Soviet Union had exploded a nuclear device. By the time we recognized that the Soviet Union, already a nuclear power, was ahead of us in the space race when they launched Sputnik into orbit, the pride of the power of the United States was absolutely smashed. We still had the power, but we had no pride in it. And we had no backbone, no resolve, no willingness to actually use it. We had one ignominious defeat after another. Korea was a defeat. It was not merely a stalemate. Very quickly after those days, the so-called peace talks at Panmunjom, when, incidentally, some of the bloodiest of all the battles of the Korean War were being waged while nation played king of the mountain against other nation, in full view of some troops with ice cream for dessert, other troops were dying on the neighboring mountain. We committed troops piecemeal. We tried to lean on an enemy by some of the most incredibly inept and stupid methods of waging a war that had ever been heard of in all of history, that harked clear back to the days of the trenches of World War I, when all military leadership learned that if you want to win a war, you don't commit troops piecemeal, and you don't squabble over little amounts of real estate and then withdraw and give it back to the enemy. You pull out all stops and you go to win, or you simply don't get involved in the war. Even in the New Testament, the principles of counting the cost are given. And it says, by using the analogy of warfare, that any king that wants to go out to war had better count whether or not he's got the materiel and the soldiers to win, or else not get involved in it in the first place. We didn't win in Korea. Along came Cuba and the Bay of Pigs disaster, when the United States looked like it had egg all over its face. Along came the Pueblo. Before that, the Gary Powers incident. You can cite so many cases where the United States has had its face slapped, its ears boxed, its shins kicked, its stomach gouged, where we have allowed ourselves to be the whipping boy of practically any nation on earth. And anti-Americanism is not a disease, it's a favorite pastime. It's one of the things that can gain you more chuckles, and laughs in more countries around the world than any other particular pastime, is being against Uncle Sam. That's true in the banana republics in Central and South America. It's true in countries all over the world, and to a large extent, even some of those that are the most friendly, apparently, toward the United States. We've been on a massive giveaway program for as long as you can remember. We're willing to give away our wheat, our barley, our oats, our corn, our soybeans, our hides and beef, our food, not only in the private sector of care packages and private church organizations and others that are trying to send monumental amounts of clothing and food and medical supplies abroad, but even governmental programs. And now we either give away or we sell more weapons abroad than our own armed forces purchase in the course of any one given year. And here is this Bible prophecy staring at us that says, I will break the pride of your power. And then it says, I will make your heaven as iron and your earth as brass, and your strength shall be spent in vain. And heaven as iron and earth as brass is a picture of drought. And 1974 saw the beginning of something very, very ominous. And I would watch very carefully, if I were you, just exactly what kind of weather we get across the wheat and the corn belt in the United States in this upcoming spring and on into the summer and to the fall harvest. I would very, very carefully watch what happens in the weather this year. It says in verse 20, your strength shall be spent in vain. Now we pour enormous amounts of money overseas because we have to pay those exorbitant prices to keep our toys and to fuel our industries. But even that money is not perhaps the true measure of the strength of a country. We are down to some of the lowest emergency food grain reserves in years. We are barely producing enough for ourselves and the sales that we've committed to, and instead of putting anything back in a reserve, we ought to have a Joseph in the United States who says, look, you better be saving for 7 hard years. You better be putting back, so no matter what happens in the world crisis of global population and the global problem of nowhere near sufficient foodstuffs for the mouths there are to feed of mass starvation facing millions of people, that somehow the United States survives. But instead, we spend it. We give it away. And it says, your strength will be spent in vain. And we're spending our strength. What are we going to realize for it? You know, we have spent, for example, as one, I think, case in point, which is a very instructive one, an enormous amount of money in the nation of Turkey. Turkey is a member of NATO. We have armed the Turks. We've trained them. We've sent U.S. military advisors. We have given them every sophisticated weapon that we possess. And I include in that even shipments of naval vessels, by the way. Now, of course, Turkey is supposed to be a definite friend of the United States, a member of NATO. But then along came this terrible war there in Cyprus between the Turks and the Greek Cypriots. Now, Turkey, for all of the enormous amount of the spending of our strength that has gone into Turkey, what have we gotten for it? Well, now Turkey is making plans to close some or all of United States bases in that country. And now we look so bewildered and like little boys in the schoolyard who are hurt because somebody won't let us jump rope. Our lower lip is kind of quivering and our trembled chin is moving a little bit. We just can't understand it. Why those ungrateful people over there in Turkey would be Turks and speak Turkish and would have their racial pride and their national ideas and their own country's self-interest first, no matter how much we give them or how much we protect them or how much we send them or claim we like them, that when it really gets right down to brass tacks, that country is going to go it alone and look at its own national self-interest first. So now we're going to be kicked out of Turkey, and these are areas where we have sacked bases. This is where Gary Powers began the now infamous flight when he was overflying the Soviet Union to continue CIA surveillance on Soviet missile sites. It's strange, isn't it? Yet we're going to continue to do this to Middle Eastern countries, and I guess we hope to get just about the same treatment out of them as we've gotten from Turkey eventually. That's what we're buying for all of our weapons deals and all of our food that we give away abroad. Well, I've got to break off for lack of time. The next time I'm going to take you through a little bit of the book of Hosea and show you exactly what one of those prophecies says. You can write to the current number of the Plain Truth and get this article about the Shah of Iran, the one about Britain tumbling down Europe's economic ladder. So be sure to request the Plain Truth, and remember, it's absolutely free. There is no charge. All you need to do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. We need that. That's all. There is no cost. But tell us the name of the radio station to which you've been listening, the call letters, and then send your letter to Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO, Sydney, New South Wales.